Scripture reading this morning is Genesis chapter 50, verses 15 through 26. Genesis 50, verses 15 through 26. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "It may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him." So they sent a message to Joseph saying, "Your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin, because they did evil to you. And now, please forgive the transgressions of the servants of the God of your father." Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, "Behold, we are your servants." But Joseph said to them, "Do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones." Thus he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So Joseph remained in Egypt, he and his father's house. Joseph lived 110 years, and Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were counted as Joseph's own. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I am about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here." So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt.
What made me come to the idea of preaching the lesson on the character of Joseph? Randy's smiling because he knows where I'm going with this. When I first came back from Texas to California, Mickey, recovering from one of his several surgeries that he's had, asked me if I would assist Randy in a study that we were having with a young man by the name of Shannon. Well, they had gone through the plan of salvation from Genesis all the way up to the Lord himself. And so we were revisiting Genesis. And I believe we started probably a little bit before Joseph, but we got into the part about Joseph. And the more we studied and the more we read, I looked at that and I was just amazed. Just amazed at the character of this young man. Excuse me. Don't know why this is happening, but it is. Excuse me. But just to see that in him, despite the bitterness, despite the wickedness, and the evil treatment that he received from his brothers and all around him, Joseph always kept his character. He knew his place. He had forgiveness. And no matter what, he always said, "Well, it's because God put me in this position. He put me here for a reason." And we'll see that as we continue our study. But when we think of the, forgive me for getting emotional, but it just kind of hit me. But anyways, but I guess that's a good thing because it means a lot to my heart to see this. But when we think of the patriarchs, the following likely to come to mind. And we think of, my clicker. Almost forgot to turn that on, but anyways, you'll see we're going to be talking from Genesis 37 verse 1, but don't worry, we're not going to read all those, and that's not why there's only 5 slides on that piece of paper, because that's quite a bit of reading. But we're going to touch on pretty much from Genesis 31 to chapter 50, to the end of chapter 50. And so when we think of the patriarchs, we think of Abraham, a man of faith. Even though it's not read from Genesis, but we read in James chapter 2 and verses 21 through 23 where Abraham was told to offer up his son. And in verse 21, we read here, "Was it not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac, his son, on the altar? You see that faith was working with his works, and as a result of the works, faith was perfected and the scripture was fulfilled. And Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." So we see there's a great thing about Abraham here. Also, when Abraham was told to leave the land and go into the land of Ur of Chaldees, Abraham didn't argue with God. He got up and he went. And we also think of Isaac, the son of promise, in Genesis chapter 26. Put your markers in Genesis because we're going to spend a lot of time there this morning. Genesis chapter 26. Look at verses 2 through 5. If I remember to do this. And now we're talking about Isaac, the son of promise. Genesis chapter 26, 2 through 5. And it says, "And Jehovah appeared unto him and said, Go not down into Egypt, dwell into the land which I shall tell thee." In verse 3, it says, "Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee and bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore unto your father Abraham." In verse 4 it says, "And I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and will give unto the sky, it will give unto thy seed all these lands, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because that Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." And we also read about Jacob, the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. In Genesis 35, beginning at verse 10, he says, "And God said unto him, Thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and company of nations shall be of thee. And kings shall come out of thy loins, and the land which I gave unto Abraham and Isaac, to thee I will give it, and to the seed after thee I will give the land." So we see these three patriarchs, because when we talk about patriarchs, that's probably the first top three that come to our minds. But yet when we think of Joseph, that patriarch, there's more space in Genesis that's devoted to him than there is these three that we just discussed. So we need to consider that. There's not a single word in that scriptures that we read about Joseph that is of reproof about something Joseph did or against Joseph. Throughout Genesis 37:1 through chapter 50 and verse 26, we find there not one word of reproof. And indeed, the character of Joseph is worthy of a careful study. His nobility of character, his purity of heart, his life, his worthiness as a ruler and a brother. These qualities make him more than any other Old Testament characters, an illustration of the type of man which Christ was to give to the world in perfection. So with that being said, I hope that we can take the time now to review and be reminded of the wonderful character that is displayed by this man of God. So first of all, let's look when Joseph was a son in the land of Canaan. First of all, we understand that he was hated by his brothers. Look at verse chapter 37. Genesis 37, verse 2. "These are the records of the generations of Jacob. Joseph, when he was 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wife. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their father." Well, first of all, as we see here, that this is one of the reasons his brothers hated him. Well, why was that? Because Joseph brought back a good report? Well, he brought back the report. He brought back the truth. His brothers weren't doing those things that were right. And he brought back to Jacob a bad report, beginning that hatred that his brothers had for him. In Genesis 37, we see that he had favoritism by his father. Look at verse 3 in the same chapter of 37. "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a very colored tunic. His brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, so they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms." We see that this favoritism also began the hatred in his brothers towards him. First, by telling on them, and second, by the favoritism that Jacob had for him. His dreams even made it worse if you look at verse 5. Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. Well, why is that? We'll see. He said to them, "Please listen to me, this dream which I have had. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect. And behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf." And we also see that then his brothers said to him, "Are you actually going to reign over us? Or are you really going to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. So we see here how the hatred that his brothers had began and built up more and more and more. So we see that also that Joseph was one that was very faithful to his father. Look at verse 13 of chapter 37. Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing in the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send you to them." What did Joseph say? "No, father, I got other things to tend to. I'm kind of busy right now." No, he said unto him, "I will go." And when we think about that, how many often do we wish our children had that same type of obedience that Joseph had? How many times do we say to our children, "Well, it's because I said so"? Those of you who are fathers and mothers, well, you know what I'm talking about. Several times. "Well, why, Mom? Because I said so." "Why, Dad? Because I said so." I don't know how many times I heard that growing up. "It's because I said so." So we think about those things and we see that even because of this, that because of his hatred, for one thing, we see that he was sold as a slave. But also, being faithful to your father, you know, Ephesians 6, 1 through 3, Paul talks about children obeying their parents, how this is good. We won't need to read that, but do put that in your bookmarkers and go ahead and sometime today, go back and read that, where it talks about where Paul says, "Children, obey your parents, for this is good in the eyes of the Lord." It's a good thing to be obedient. Well, let's talk also about the fact that Joseph, with all the ill treatment, followed by the separation from his country and from his family, would produce bitterness, hopelessness, and even anger in such a young man. But yet the character of Joseph really shines even more when we consider Joseph was sold into slavery in Egypt. We see that he became overseer in Potiphar's house, Genesis 39. Genesis 39, verses 1 through 6. Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers because they hated him, because of their hatred. We see that Reuben and Judah did some things because they did not want their brother to be killed, but they opted to have him sold to the Ishmaelites and sold into slavery. In verse 1 of chapter 39, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of the Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. And he made him overseer in his house, and all that he owned, he put in his charge. And it came about from that time he made him overseer in the house, and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge. And with him there, he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. And what notice in the second half of that verse, we'll talk about that in just a minute. But we see that it didn't take much for him to be seen or blessed by God, and he found favor in Potiphar's eye. Potiphar saw that in everything that Joseph did, that God was with him. That raises an interesting question to me, and it should you too. We ask the questions, do folks see that very same thing in us? Does our family, our friends, our neighbors, our co-workers, Do they see the same quality that Potiphar saw in Joseph? He obviously saw that God was with Joseph. Why was that? He couldn't see internally into Joseph and see where his heart was, but he saw his actions. He saw the man, the character that Joseph was. And he attributed that to God. So we too can learn from that, that we too, our actions, our lives, the things that we do, the things that we say, who we're with, family, co-workers, friends, neighbors, you name it. We need to make sure that they know that God's in our life. Either by word or by action. Because both are needed and both are important. He made the best of the situation, and God blessed him and Potiphar. So we see in the second half of chapter 39, verse 6, that Joseph was handsome, and he was tempted by Potiphar's wife. From verse 6 to verse 20, we can read different parts about that. We know the story as Potiphar's wife was attracted to Joseph. Potiphar's wife, at several times, asked Joseph to lie with her. She tried time and time again to seduce him. He resisted out of faithfulness to Potiphar and to God. Look at verses 8 and 9 of chapter 39. In chapter 8, but he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, with me here my master does not concern myself with anything in the house, as he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" And in verse 10, "And she spoke to Joseph day after day. He did not listen to her to lie beside her nor with her. Now it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men were in the household, was inside. She caught him by his garment and said, 'Lie with me.' And he left the garment in his hand and fled and went outside." We talked about this on Wednesday night. We talked about when we were talking about the idea of lust. When we have lust in our heart. When we say, do we go to places where people are not dressed? They're dressed worldly or not dressed well? We purposely do that? We talked about Joseph, and I mentioned that when he saw that, he took off. She grabbed a hold of what he had on and he just left it in her hands. "I'm out of here." And the reason that was is because of what he said before. "How can I do this great sin against God?" We need to keep that in mind, brethren. That when we see or we lust after things, think about what Joseph said. "How can I do this great sin against God?" I think if we keep that in our hearts and we keep that in our minds, I think it will help us flee from those temptations and flee from those lusts. And we see that she tried again to seduce him. But out of faithfulness to Potiphar and God, he resisted. With the kindness of his master and the displeasure of God before his eyes, how could he be capable of committing an act of transgression which would at once have distinguished him as the most ungrateful and most worthless of men? And that's from Clark's commentary. And I wanted to put that in there because I think that's right. He would have shown himself to be the most worthless of men if he had laid or lied down with Potiphar's wife. Not only to God, but also to Potiphar. Her advances spurned. She spitefully accused him wrongfully, angering her husband, resulting in Joseph's ultimate imprisonment. So now that that has happened, we see that he's overseer in Pharaoh's prison. Look at Genesis chapter 39. Look at verse 21. And this is one of the things that I talked about with Randy, and even in our study, that Joseph goes from being second in Potiphar's house over everything except for one thing, his wife, to being in prison. And what immediately do we find that the jailer sees? He sees the character of Joseph, that he's blessed by God and he's favored by the keeper of the prison. Look at verse 21 of chapter 39. "But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor inside of the chief jail. The chief jailer committed Joseph's charge to all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it." the chief jailer, verse 23, did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. So we see here that Joseph immediately goes into prison. He's immediately put in charge of things. He who acknowledges God, and that's a lesson for us all, he who acknowledges God in all his ways has the promise that God shall direct all his steps. Joseph's master saw that Jehovah was with him. And from this we can learn that the knowledge of the true God was in even in Egypt. Because we see that Potiphar saw that God was with Joseph. The jailer saw that God was with Joseph. And we will also see that the Pharaoh saw that God was with Joseph. So that tells me one thing. How did these three people know about God? Is it possible that maybe Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob left such, I guess you can know how you put it, like kind of a, kind of like when you're cooking and you smell it in your house, you know, a savor, I guess that's a word we can use. Is it possible that those three patriarchs left that kind of savor of God, even though the Egyptians did not worship that God, and maybe they might even forbid it, but they knew about it. They knew about God, and I think it was because of Abraham, Jacob, and Isaac. And they saw that in Joseph, in his life, his character, and in how he handled himself. He was an interpreter of dreams. Joseph here is forgotten at this point in time. In Genesis 40, if you look at Genesis 40, chapter 40, verse 1 through 41 through 36, we won't read all that. But that's when Joseph is in the prison and he interprets the dreams of the butler and the baker. First of all, we see that he acknowledges God as the interpreter. Genesis 40 and verse 8. But he said to them, "We have a dream and there is no one to interpret it." Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." God, Joseph didn't say, "Tell it to me because I can interpret your dream." He said, "Interpretations belong to God." He gave the credit to God. We find in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 28, it says, "But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets." In Daniel chapter 2 and verse 47, "The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth, your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou hast been able to reveal this secret." Dreams are fulfilled, but yet Joseph is forgotten. In verses 20 and 23 of chapter 40, "Thus it came about on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants. He lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but he forgot him." So we see that Joseph is thrown in jail. He interprets the dreams of Pharaoh, of the butler and the baker. And then he is quickly forgotten. But yet he acknowledged God as giving the answer. And not only that, he offering advance in regards to the dream's fulfillment. Look at verse chapter 41, verses 33 and 36. Chapter 41, 33 and 36 through 36. "Now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge, exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt, and let them gather all the food in the good years that are coming to store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine." So we see that Joseph offers the advice to Pharaoh for the years of famine, what to do during the years of plenty, to store this up because you will need to keep this. Joseph gives the advice to Pharaoh. And he says, in what Joseph says here, "Look for a man discerning and wise," in verse 33. And that's the point we need to really focus our attention on. we find Joseph giving advice to Pharaoh to choose a discreet and wise man. Could not Joseph have easily have said, let me tell you something. Let me tell you. Joseph was humble. He knew what he could do, but yet he said, Pharaoh, you're in charge. You choose a discreet man to make these decisions. This decision is yours to make. Joseph knew his place. Notice Joseph did not say anything about himself being this man, but only gave advice to Pharaoh. So we see falsely accused and forgotten by man. We might wonder, why bother to be righteous? Why? Because we think about all that has happened to Joseph, being treated the way he was treated by his brothers, have bitterness against him. But yet Joseph maintained this integrity and was not forgotten by God. Just as he found the eyes and the favor of the eyes of Potiphar and the keeper in the prison, so he enjoyed favor in the eyes of Pharaoh. Each time Joseph was seen as one whom God was with, a remarkable attribute that each of us should work and strive to work for every day. So we find now is Joseph's life as a prince in Egypt. He was wise in service to Pharaoh. At the age 30, Joseph exalted to ruler over all of Egypt. Genesis 41:38-46. Joseph gave good advice to Pharaoh. Fair warning should always be followed by good counsel. And here's the point I want to make there. Does not God, in His Word, tell us day after day that there's going to be a trial set before us? We are going to be judged. To me, that's good advice. God tells us also when we shall need what we shall do, need to, what we need to do so that all the grace that we need and can have will be with us at that time. Joseph tells Pharaoh there's going to be a famine, but at the same time, he tells him good advice and what to do. God tells us all of us are going to be judged in the end. He gives us good advice and what we should do. Are we going to be as quickly to listen as Pharaoh was? Pharaoh listened to Joseph. He did what Joseph said to do. Do we listen to God? Are we going to do what God tells us to do? God gives us great advice to be ready for that day. Let's make sure that we pay attention to that and make sure that we are in the right way with God. Falsely accused, forgotten by man, many might wonder, why bother to be righteous? Joseph maintained his integrity, was not forgotten by God. He found favor. So in each time, Joseph was seen whom God as one whom God was with. We see that remarkable attribute. And we see this one here when he was a prince in Egypt. He was wise in his service to Pharaoh. His wisdom manifested in his administration of the things that Pharaoh made him put him over. Showing foresight during the years of plenty. Genesis 41:47-49. We see that during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly. So he gathered all the food of the 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt and placed the food in cities. He placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. Do we not see Joseph taking those things and being mindful of those things and wise in his service to Pharaoh? We also see that he was merciful to his brothers from the treatment of his brothers. In Genesis chapter 42, if you turn over to 42:1-45, we see that his brothers are finally reunited with Joseph's finally reunited with his brothers and his father. And Joseph at this point in time had every right to be angry and to be bitter with them, but he wasn't. What he did is that he arranged for them to live in the land of Goshen. Genesis chapter 46. Turn over to Genesis chapter 46, if you would. Look at verse 16. The sons of Gad, and it goes through all the list of the sons. We won't need to read all that. But let's skip on down to... Now, Joseph into verse 20. Now to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bore to him. The sons of Benjamin, Bela, all the sons, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ehi, and Rosh, and Muppen, and Huppen, and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob. They were 14 persons of all, the sons of Dan and Husham, and Naphtali, Jazel, Gunai, Jezer, and Shelah. These are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to his daughter Rachel, and she bore to Jacob. All were the same. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came to Egypt, his direct descendants, and including their wives of Jacob's sons, were 36 persons in all. And all the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. All the persons of the house of Jacob came to Egypt were 70. And we see in verse 29, Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father. As soon as he appeared before him, he fell on his neck and wept in a long time. I'm sorry, I guess there was a part I skipped over that where he goes to Potiphar and Pharaoh, and Pharaoh allows them to move into the land of Goshen. I'm looking for that, but for time's sake, read that. And I know it's... I apologize for that. I know that read that, that was in there. But we know that that's where they ended up, was in the land of Goshen. Because he went to Pharaoh and asked Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said they can live in the land of Goshen. To live there, to leave from, to come to Egypt and live there. And that was because of the famine. So he arranged for them to live in Goshen. Look at 28 and verse 34. Now he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out the way to him to Goshen, and they came into the land of Goshen. All I had to do was read one more verse. My apologies. That's all I had to do. And in verse through verse 34, and in verse 47 through 1 through 12, we also read of them in the land of Goshen and their flocks and their herds. And they have come to the out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen, in verse 1. So we see that Joseph makes arrangements. But why? Why should he have done that? His brothers hated him. They treated him awfully. They sold him into slavery, but yet when they come in the time of need, he forgives them and gives them a place to live in the land of Goshen. So he not only forgives and forgets, but he wishes even those who had wronged him to forget the injury they had done, that they too might not suffer distress on the account. And with deep piety, he attributes the whole thing to the providence of God, for he says, God did send me before you to preserve you for life. So think about that, brethren. His brothers hated him, sold him into slavery. He's bought by Potiphar from the Ishmaelites. He's under Potiphar. Potiphar's wife lies about him. He's thrown into jail. He immediately becomes supervisor of all the prisoners in jail. He interprets the dreams, tells the dreams, but then he's forgotten about. Then he's brought to Pharaoh because Pharaoh has a dream and he needs somebody to interpret it. And he sees all these things and he tells them, gather up during the good times, so that during the bad times you will have plenty. So much so that people that his brothers and his father came from Egypt because there was no grain where they were. And when they came, he wasn't bitter. He wasn't spiteful. His explanation of it was, God put me here for a reason. Not to be hateful against you, but to preserve you, is what he says. To preserve you. How many of us could say that we would be like that? He believed in the providence of God, as we well said, that God would make good things come out of evil intentions. Look at Genesis 50 and verse 20. That was in our reading. Genesis 50 and verse 20. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. That was the attitude of Joseph. God would keep his promises made to his people. in verses 24 and 25 at the end of chapter 50. So I ask all of us, in conclusion, in the life and the story of Joseph, do we not see a value of a great character? We read about Abraham, we read about Jacob, we read about Isaac, but we read about Joseph. There's more in the book of Genesis written about Joseph. And that there's not one bad thing said or one word of reproof said about Joseph. So we see that this noble character can be useful in all seasons of life, in our lives, if we look at that and we try to apply those things. So I say to all of us this morning, in our end of our lesson, conclusion, that may the character of Joseph serve to inspire us to develop our character as well, that in some small way we can too have the same characteristics as Joseph did. If you would, turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 4. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12. So just as the character of Joseph served to inspire us to develop our character as well, Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and in verse 12, he says, "So let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself to be an example to those who believe." Are we an example to those who believe? Are we examples to those who don't believe? Joseph was to those who didn't believe. They knew about God, and they saw God in Joseph. They saw how God affected Joseph's life and the man that he was. He's a great character in the Old Testament that all of us can learn from. I appreciate your attention and your patience. We ask that if there's anybody here this morning that's not a child of God, just as we said, God gives us fair warning and then He also gives us advice in His good book. That warning is that we will all be judged one day. And to be ready, one of those things to make yourself ready is to become a child of God. You must be a child of God. If you're not, why not do that this morning? Also, in the same way, He also tells us that if we are a child of God and we have sinned in some way, that we need to repent. If we don't, our sin will still be upon us when that judgment comes. We need to be ready. That's God's advice for us to be ready during that time of judgment. So if you're here this morning, you're subject to the invitation in any way, why don't you please come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.